This is a segment from The Annex, an academic sociology-themed podcast. For more, visit us on the web at theannexpodcast.com. In honor of Conrad, I wanted to talk about Twitter and public sphere platform with academics. Because as I said, of everyone in Princeton sociology during the Bush years, Conrad is undoubtedly the most followed of us. Like, just to put some context on it, if you're a regular academic who's been on the medium for a short while, maybe you have a couple hundred or a few thousand followers. Those are us mere Twitter mortals. If you're smart, you're like Leslie and don't even bother with the medium.
That's right. I'm not even in the game.
Smart, smart, smart. And if you're sociology Twitter famous, and what I would consider, you got 5, 6, 7, 10,000 followers. Gabriel is sociology Twitter famous for his extremely interesting, though often difficult to understand feed.
That's my brand.
Crypticality is what he trades in.
Yeah, exactly. If I say something that's comprehensible, I worry that I'm losing it.
And then in the next leap up, there's like more than sociology famous. These are like the sociologists who are in the same league as Better Place journalists with like 20 or 30,000 people. So that's like Sarah Goldrick Rabb, Kieran, Jesse Daniels, Lisa Wade, Tressie McMillan. Uh-huh. And then you have Conrad Hackett. Conrad, how many followers do you have?
Something like 150,000.
So, Conrad, my first question to you is what?
So, wait. Actually, Conrad, if you have a cold, how much does Jack's net worth drop for the day? Like the stock valuation, like you got to figure that you just, you know, he can't get a mortgage.
Yeah, that's the next level up. I'm not quite the Kim Kardashian, Donald Trump level
yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like one of her sisters said, like, you know, Snapchat sucks or something, and their stock dropped 20%.
Conrad, what happens? What happens when you get 150,000 followers?
You know, it's kind of unreal. When I started on Twitter, my big goal was to get 100 people who would listen to what I had to say. And I had a sense that I could probably do pretty well in thinking one sentence at a time. That's probably why I've had some measure of success on Twitter. You know, Gabriel just kind of spits out ASR articles. I spit out senses that the average person can understand and sometimes finds interesting. But it took a while to get those first 100 people. And then after that, I kind of started to figure out what works. The great thing is now having as many people follow me for whatever reason as they do, I can pose a question and have a pretty good expectation that somebody's going to respond. And if I'm even going to a part of the world I haven't been to before, there's a good chance that I can ask for recommendations of what to do there and get some advice.
So that's basically, I think of all the people toiling away to build up their Twitter followership, dreaming of the day they hit 50,000, 100,000. And you're telling me that the main payoff is foreign restaurant recommendations and you get tips if you need them.
Yeah, you could have saved a lot of time by just buying a Lonely Planet.
For me, the cool thing about Twitter is that there's lots of journalists on them, and they're the ones who are logging in every day and having interesting conversation about what's going on in the world, especially with regards to politics and the work we do at the Pew Research Center. We're definitely interested in having journalists engage with our work. And so by being active on Twitter, I've been able to have a lot of interaction with journalists and enjoy following them, have quite a few people who I respect following me, you know, people like Nate Silver, Ezra Klein, David at the Upshot, David Leonhardt is his name at the New York Times. And so that's been a big upside too. Not just the number of people following, but engaging with key influencers, journalists, and so forth.
Do you ever meet any of these people?
There's a lot of people that I respect and have interacted with on Twitter, but I've never met. But last weekend, I was at a conference where I met the urbanist up in Canada. Now, of course, I'm forgetting his name.
Richard Florida,
and met Ross Douthat, and both of them said, oh, you know, I follow you on Twitter. And so that was kind of an entree for conversation with people that I hadn't met in person before.
Was there anyone there petting a white cat who had a control panel that could make your seat fall into a pit of flame?
Like Dr. Evil?
or Blofeld, yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Your follower count drops below 140,000.
But seriously, Conrad, from your vantage point, what do you think about the role that Twitter is playing in the social science community? Is it something that you see a lot of opportunity for? Do you think that scholars are using Twitter correctly? Like, what's your view from where you stand on Twitter and social science?
Well, I think the one thing that is working pretty well is the network of communication among this sort of sociology Twitter crowd. And it's probably the same thing for history Twitter and psychology Twitter, where people in the field who want to be on Twitter follow the people they respect. And there's a conversation about the field or about you know, something like the ASA program theme, that it's timely and topical and happening there. And it's a pretty small network of people who are part of that conversation, although many more people are just kind of watching from the sidelines. And then something else that happens is academics are just expressing their political opinions. And that's where you get a lot of sort of flame throwing and trolling. You could have opinions about the merits of that. And then I think what's most difficult is to use Twitter as a medium for sharing one's research with a broad public. And that's where, if you're fortunate to have a lot of people following you or you get retweeted by somebody who has a large audience, then the work can get spread out pretty well, especially if it's of broad interest for some reason. But it's probably oversold as a medium for communicating the latest journal publication that one has. You know, it just doesn't necessarily get a huge audience for the kind of work we produce in academic journals.
So kind of a distinctive thing as like somebody who has mega followers that most people don't get is, I'm wondering, how often do you get people like adding you, you know, basically seeking you, like pitching you things of like, you know, please retweet this, you know, regardless of whether it's like, here's my research paper, can you tweet the link? But, or if it's like, you know, here's some crank political idea, can you please retweet this? Like, do you get a lot of that?
I do get people reaching out to me to draw my attention to something, hoping that I'll share it. Sure. So there was a guy who recently passed away, Celestius Juma at Harvard, would frequently pass along his stuff. Brad Wilcox at Virginia.
Well, I'm not necessarily talking, so that's cool that you have other scholars, you know, some of whom you went to grad school with, you know, relying on you for circulating things. But I was thinking more just like,
you're thinking of cranks. Like, here's my weird theory.
Well, yeah. Or like, you know, I mean, like, you know, we were joking before the show about it. And I should be clear, you were not saying anything remotely hostile. But, you know, idiosyncratically, you have this huge Turkish following. Like, do you ever have people like, you know, tweeting you saying like, you know, pro Erdogan or anti Erdogan or, you know, whatever, you know, please retweet this.
Well, definitely in the reply sections for a Twitter thread, there'll be people who are expressing all kinds of opinions. And, you know, I see those, but don't engage with them. If somebody asks a sincere question, I'll try to answer the question. But otherwise, there's a lot of follow-up conversation that I just don't get involved in.
And Conrad, how much time do you typically spend, let's say, in a week on Twitter? Like, either, you know, looking to see who's responded to one of your tweets, you know, to, you know, and try and respond back, or to just like craft your, I don't even know, is it a sentence? Like, do you have a certain number of characters, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now they've expanded the number of characters. So now it can be two sentences.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, does it take you a while to, you know, take one of your most recent studies, right? That's like 8,000 words, and try and distill it into those two sentences.
Yeah, so it does vary. So if we put out a new study that seems interesting to me, I'll actually look at a study my colleagues have done when it's released to the world. I'll just kind of go through it and share what I think are really interesting findings. And we have nice graphics that go along well with the Twitter medium. And sometimes when I find a great ASR article, a frustration is there is no graphic that nicely encapsulates the story. But I'll keep going through the article and do that. If it's a long report, like a report we recently put out on religion in Western Europe, just reading through the report and tweeting that out might take an hour. But otherwise, a lot of times I'm using Twitter during downtime when I'm on the metro or just kind of between projects. I haven't really measured how much time I spend in a given week. Probably a little bit too much time, but not so much time that I can't do other important things.
That's probably why I don't bump into you anymore, because you're too busy looking at your Twitter feed while you're walking and you don't see me.
For more, visit us on the web, theannexpodcast.com.